everyone. I'm Wade MacWayne, and welcome to episode one of Scrotus POTUS, where we talk about North American politics from a uniquely North American point of view from London, England. Joining me on this episode, very exciting, we've got two amazing comedians. We have Scott Capurro, all the way from San Francisco, California, via London, and Phil Nichol, originally from Scotland, but lived in Canada, and now he lives in London. We're going to have a great show. We're going to talk about politics, upcoming election, the environment, and Russia. Stay tuned, guys. You're going to enjoy this episode. This is episode one, week one of Scrotus POTUS. I am Wade MacWayne. Joining me are Scott Capurro and Phil Nichol. Now, before I give you an intro, obviously, we're talking about American politics. And so I wanted to use the Trump insult generator to describe you. So, Scott Capurro, you're goofball atheist Scott Capurro, never had a chance. And Phil Nichol. Phil Nichol works really hard, but is a guy who just doesn't have it. A total loser.
That's have had worse said.
Wow. Oh, I know. So this
by Scott Capurro.
That's my last Edinburgh review, I think.
We're obviously talking about North American politics, and we are North Americans living in London. We've had a hell of a week going on here. And we just sort of want to talk about what's the state of the union? How's the world these days, especially from us having, you know, ran away from our homes and found a new home and love it. What is the state of the world? The state of the union, as we sort of address it. How do we think Trump's doing? How do we think everything is going on in the world? Scott, what are you thinking?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't read Twitter this morning, but as far as I remember, Trump's doing really good.
He's doing amazing.
Seriously, good brand. And, you know, I think that Americans are sucking it up like a milkshake. I really think a lot of them love it. I think they think he's funny and stimulating, and he's doing what he said he would do, right? He's following through very early on with the climate thingy. And I don't think he cares about the warmth of the planet because he is a flaming cunt. So I think for him, the warmer, the better. The thing is, I'm from California. My whole family's still there and friends. That's where I go back. There are New York. I don't know anyone. He's so unpopular in New York City. I don't know anyone who's ever voted for him, even considered it. I don't know these people. I don't know these conservative people live in Wyoming that think he's great at what he does. I've only seen them interviewed, and I don't believe what they're saying half the time anyway.
See, I was just in Florida about a month ago, and huge. Like, he is number one. He can do no wrong. Trump. He is our president. So obviously different areas of America have different feelings and different sentiments.
Lower levels of education, he does better. And I don't mean that in a snobbish way. It just comes out that way. No, he does do better in states like Mississippi and Kansas where there's a problem with public education. I think...
Do you think it's an education thing? Do you think it's an economics thing, though? Do you think it's maybe because those are economically deprived areas in New York where you've got huge people doing very well and very democratic? You know, maybe it's a lot of people who are basically lied to, and he's sort of the solution. It's like, hey, you know, after this housing collapse and all these politicians that have lied and said all this crap, he's this reality show god that comes on and says what he says. And
yeah. But he lies repeatedly. I think they don't mind being lied to. I think what they like about it is they feel like it's it's basically a fuck you to Obama and to Birkenstock-wearing, hippie, kind of, you know, vegan, organic people that want clean food and clean air. And it's sort of saying to them, you know, what you feel and think, I don't care about. I also think there's racism. I think a lot of people in the U.S. who voted for Trump didn't like being told what to do by a black man. I really think they see it that way. Mm-hmm. I think they see or saw Hillary's policies as being an extension of that. And, you know, as if a black man's
just
not bad
another
enough,
woman telling him what to do.
Exactly. Yeah. So
what's next? A black woman.
Oh, my gosh.
I hope so. Michelle Obama, save us.
Wouldn't that be good?
All Michelle or Oprah need a bigger throne and some backup singers, and they have got a hit. Seriously. We need a celebrity in the Democratic Party. It works for Republicans.
What about Al Franken?
Right. You're right.
Well, he's popular. He's a TV star.
He's finally put out a comedy book when he was able to hide his political leanings. He couldn't really talk about it. He had to apologize every time he sort of rolled his eyeballs.
I would have said Bill Cosby into the fingering, although he's only... I mean, the trial's going on now. Who knows? Finger, maybe. He'll get
my fingers are crossed.
I'm going to take a sip on that.
Swallow it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so maybe...
It does taste like...
like Bill.
I think that we need a celebrity running. I think people like name recognition.
But all the left-wing celebrities are all from other places. So Schwarzenegger, John Oliver, James Corden.
Schwarzenegger's a Republican, though.
Yeah.
He's definitely not a California Republican. He's really left wing.
It's true. How about this? Because Phil, you were just traveling in China.
Yes.
What was the sort of foreign take? I mean, when you're looking at an abroad, because people a lot of times you and I are both Canadian. Sometimes we go, "Oh, where in America are you from?" Or people sort of calling us Americans or assuming that we're certain things, even though we are North Americans living abroad.
Well, I was in Vietnam on the Chinese border, so I wasn't actually in China, although I have been there. I did shows through Southeast Asia.
Jakarta. China, just because it's all to me. It's just one place.
I know what you're
They're
like.
Just all one
noodles.
Thing.
It's noodles,
just
right?
All the one thing.
the expats there are quite odd because they're odd because expats are odd anyway. Yeah. We are them.
Yeah, they're
but they're a bit odd, especially when you're out there. And any American expats you meet out there are. They're not going to show you if they do like Trump. They're not going to show it.
Yeah.
So it was very easy to make fun of him. In fact, it's really easy to make fun of Trump. You have to say the word Trump and be like, that's, you know, lay it on. But actually, they know the reality is him pulling out of TPP affects a lot of people in those nations. I think they hate him. The nationals that were living there and the people from Jakarta specifically who were there were coming up to me and going, like, I really like what you're saying. And I'm not even a political comedian. I just do jokes about it, you know, making fun of the sort of the mental illness that's going through the southern states, you know, the population. I think they're just lied to. They're a little bit, they're being brainwashed and mentally ill. But making jokes about it is easy because it's obvious to me. I think if I did those same jokes in Mississippi, I would get strung up.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's hard to say, though, because he's such a satire, Trump, already. So it's, in a way, it's difficult to catch up with him as a comic. But also, sometimes when you bring him up here, I think people take it very seriously, that relationship between the UK and the US. And I think it brings the room down a bit sometimes here in the UK. I think it's a bit of a Debbie Downer, especially when you're in London, because Londoners really... like New Yorkers really despise him and everything he stands for.
Well, that's true. I think all those people want to move on unless you've got something really, it can't be a political comment. If it's just a more of a joke about him and bring him down, then we've heard all those. You know, he does it himself.
Right.
And I think, but out in Southeast Asia, he's highly, he is a joke. It's a living joke, even though they realize there's a lot of anger about it, especially in Indonesia, which is, you know, obviously it's a Muslim country and on his hit list.
Yeah.
So they can't believe it because, you know, you go there, Jakarta's a city of 20 million people. And
it's the most densely populated Muslim country in the world, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Very lovely people.
Very, very nice, very lovely, hospitable people who live in a big city compared to any other big city in the world. And when we went to Hanoi and went to Vietnam, which has got even more reason to be anti-American, and I was with a group of American guys riding motorcycles. They were the friendliest, nicest, happiest people and most welcoming people that of all the places. In fact, we kind of jokingly said they're like the Scottish. They're like the Scots of Southeast Asia. They were funny, self-deprecating.
Loved a headbutt.
And tough and tough.
Nice.
Tough as fuck.
Yeah. I think it comes down to, as we start looking at it, is the difference between the domestic policy. Domestic, as we're saying, North, you know, a lot of Americans love them. And foreign policy, because a lot of times... you know, you have a lot of these ambassadors who are actually arguing against them. And traditionally, ambassadors stay nonpartisan. Mm. That's their whole thing. They serve the president 150%. They don't get involved. You have David Rank, who resigned from the ambassador of China.
Yeah.
You have Louis Lukens, who is the ambassador, the acting ambassador from the UK, criticizing Trump when Trump was going against Sadiq Khan over the incidents that happened in London. And then you've got the ambassador of Qatar, which Qatar is obviously having some problems this week as well. He also resigned. So, you know, you've got this real sort of international sort of FU to Trump, which you're not, it's sort of unprecedented to have your ambassadors, you know, and obviously because Hillary being in the State Department ahead of time, there was some maybe a little bit of animosity there. But do you think how good is that for a president to have all of your ambassadors and your foreign, because they're supposed to represent your words?
Yeah,
you know, and it's like we're pulling out of climate change.
So is that why they're resigning because they can't support his words?
Climate change, the guy from China. Yeah, that's why he left today.
He left. Rank. Lukens, I think, is just he's the act before Woody Johnson comes in. So that I think he's the interim guy, and I think he really wants to stand up for Londoners. And you know, I think there was a miscommunication between what Trump. I don't think he really read what Khan had put. And, you know, obviously he's got to be more sensitive. And
Trump read what Khan had put. He misquoted it.
To
his own service.
So you just sort of wonder in terms of this sort of, you know, and particularly this travel ban, which was supposed to be 90 days that America was doing. That 90 days is up now.
Right.
And he never called it a travel ban. It was Executive Order 13769. And now it's a travel ban. So how does that help anything?
You know, I can't, I know he's self-destructive and he's probably an alcoholic, but I can't help but wonder why Trump is painting a target on his head. I mean, he's having the CIA, the FBI investigated.
Yeah.
He's having definite direct conflicts with some of his, who should be his greatest partners in the political world.
Yeah, and making allies with we have to build a relationship with the Russians and do all the stuff.
I mean, everything. We do have to build a relationship with Russia, obviously.
True.
But the way he's doing it, it seems so. Obviously, what so many comics have said, that, you know, Putin's got his hand up Trump's ass. So it feels like, in a way, he wants out. A lot of us have noticed during the campaign, it didn't seem like he wanted the office anyway.
He wanted to engorge his own empire?
He wanted a better contract with it was NBC, wasn't it? They'd fired him from 10 years of that TV show. He wanted back in, and he wanted more money and more power. I think he saw a way to build his brand. And also his children had some real failed businesses in Russia. He owed a lot of banks money, and he thought this is the way to pay them back. Yeah. I think he's paying off a financial debt to Russia.
Because he has gone bankrupt several times, and a lot of Middle Eastern guys have said, yeah, we've lent him money. We've bailed him out.
Yeah.
I mean, he has had some bankruptcy issues, and you know, he did his book, Art of the Deal, and then I don't know if you read Art of the Deal. I read it when I was younger, and I read Art of the Steal, where Merv Griffin basically wrote the book where he basically said, I screwed Trump. I took him in all these land deals.
Yeah, yeah.
And Merv Griffin did a hell of a job screwing him over.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you think this is actually as a result of this economic, he's basically, it's like bitch tit service for the money he owed from, you know, long time back.
Of course, he's going to try and make money out of being the president.
Yeah.
That's how he works.
Yeah.
So now he's opening up budget hotels in Mississippi because he's going to rake the money in out of those people.
He got all those copyrights out of China, too, hundreds of them.
Yeah, lots of them, right?
So, I mean, also he's trying to open up, obviously, every time he met someone at the G7 2 weeks ago, every country leader he met, he would say to them, apparently, "Oh yeah, I tried to open a golf course in your country. It was really hard."
Yeah,
and that's how he sees.
I wonder if he's got a date where he's in the black and then can just resign.
He is the first president though that never had served in politics and never served in the military. So his only background is business, which, you know, I think that's also where that whole drain the swamp thing came in, where you're going to have a lot of people in Washington who've made their careers out of, you know, working with politicians. Basically, you know, running a lot of these special interest groups and lobbyists and a lot of the crap that he didn't want to deal with that you'd never have in business. So you wonder if obviously they want to, you know, the people in Washington be pissed off of having this business guy come in.
Well, I think, you know, they were used to dealing with him. He's a good he was actually a friend of Hillary's because she'd been his senator for a long time. And also, I think you have to remember, you know, he grew up as a property developer in New York. He's basically a gangster, really. And his family has a history of conflict with their tenants, and you know, he's been accused of racism and all that. I think that what he is a money man, and he goes where the dollar is, and he's not really interested, I think, in civil rights or human decency, honestly.
Joe Scarborough, the guy's name this morning, saying that, you know, claiming that Bannon is running the White House. I don't think Trump's really that interested in running that part of it. I think he just wants so much. How much money can he?
Yeah.
I really see he's just wringing it out.
Well,
people believe him. That's the scary thing. Not obviously the West Coast or New York, but all around the middle, they kind of think it's almost like the ideal, like, well, he's just doing what we'd all do.
But do you actually think, when you talk about like George W. Bush, and to me, someone who, did he actually do anything?
I miss the intellectual days of George W. Bush.
I look at George W. Bush now, and he's one of his best friends is Michelle Obama. I mean, no best friends, but they're really get on friendly.
I saw the cuddly photo.
He's got
it was
real,
terrifying, actually.
His real personality, but you wonder, did he actually have any control? Did he actually do anything? It was just, Daddy, I don't want to be president.
You know,
and then he gets in.
Any of them, that's the thing. I mean, they're all bought by corporations, obviously. So you wonder, who's really running the world? I mean, who's running the U.S.? It's probably Exxon Valdez or Exxon Mobil, whatever they're called now.
The lobbies,
and British Gas.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably, they have the most money. So they're telling politicians what to do to stay in office. Mm-hmm. I think that people imagine that we have a vote that matters. And I think governments make a big deal about, say, Thursday, the election here, because it's like it's our sugar. It sweetens us. It's a drug to the public.
Yeah.
We think that we make a difference.
Yeah.
Frankly, as so many people have noticed, mostly because of social media over the last 10 years, what happens with our vote is either it's skewed or very little changes.
Yeah.
So really, all the governments do now is tell people where to shop and what to buy. If you notice when you're in a town outside of London, you're walking around, what are people doing? Shopping and buying. Mm-hmm. And all the signs, either figuratively or otherwise, are pointed toward the shops.
Yeah.
Buying builds our economy. You must buy to make us grow.
Everything is about buying, purchasing. You know, when you're not doing it by foot, you're doing it by finger.
Yeah.
So I just think...
Or eating.
But do you not notice when you go back to North America...
Shoving in a donut to give you the energy. Yeah, to give you the energy to get there.
When I'm back in North America, though, and obviously because we don't have as many commercials in the UK, do you not notice that there's this, buy, you need a new car, get your kitchen redone.
The BBC's become that. I think it's becoming harder and harder to justify that payment people make to the BBC every year for a license that means they don't advertise. When clearly their politics lean a certain direction. We've seen it a lot. And they do advertise. They advertise politicians. They advertise the church. There's different forms of advertisement in there. I mean, every time they have anything even close to a civil problem in this country, they call the archbishop. Why?
Yeah.
It's a civil issue. They're tax exempt. They're not meant to have a political position in any way. I don't care what the church thinks. Very few people do.
No, nobody does.
Oh, they put them on. I saw a priest on the tube on the way in. This, I almost kicked him in the mouth.
That's the new thing.
Well, I used to have a bit of reverence for all this shit. Now I'm just like, you know, fuck off, you old... I don't have any time. We're all busy and overwhelmed. We're underfed. We're dehydrated. We don't get enough sleep. And part of the problem is we've all become a part of this loop.
Yeah.
You know, I have a friend that just told me that she got off of Facebook and Twitter, and that's just, it gave me a hard on. I thought, I wish as a, you know, I can't.
Yeah, well, I did. I did.
You don't use Facebook to sell tickets?
No, I do. I'm on now, but I did a year and a half off Facebook. I mean, it was amazing.
Really?
But I had to get back on to sell a project that I was doing.
Well, let's jump
And then it's like they call a boomerang drug, like cocaine or heroin. When you get back on it, you get back on it hard. Oh, yeah. I went back on it and was like, I'm on it. I'm on it now.
The rush.
I'm thinking about it now. Just mentioning it makes me think, ooh, I want to tweet something about this.
But let's talk about that then. So this is the only president. I mean, Obama touched on Twitter.
Obama used social media a lot.
He used it, but now you've got this president who's using it more than anyone. And in fact, is it right for a politician to be using a corporation as their mouthpiece, particularly a corporation that's not doing well financially? And what does it say about a president who should not be, as now, he's not a citizen that should be allowed to do that? Should he be using it? Now,
I'm more worried about his Tinder use, to be honest, because he's on Tinder, he's on Grindr.
He's on Scruffy.
What's Scruffy?
It's called Scruff,
tell
I think.
Tell me about
guys,
Scruff.
Bearded guys. Full-figured bearded men. Like,
sure,
what?
Like me, exactly. Full-figured. I once said I'm a bit of a bear, and my friend went, baby bear.
No, you're a cub.
And your porridge is cold.
No, I think... You know, look, thank God it's only 112 symbols he can use. Otherwise, we'd be going on and on.
Wait till he learns emoticons.
But then you also have to look at it. Is it, though? Because he says it. And let me read the quote he says today about it when he was talking about not using. The fake MSM is working. So hard trying to get me to not use social media. They hate that I can get the honest and unfiltered message out.
We have to look around. And I'm not – I hate blame in politics because we all make our own choices. But seriously, the media had so much to do with why he's become president. I mean, you know, I read the papers online every day, and every day, even The Guardian, mostly The Guardian, he's on the front page 7 times.
Yeah.
If you give someone that much unfettered coverage, of course they're going to win the office.
Yeah.
18 months of it. Not like here where it's, 6 weeks. 18 months. So he didn't have to spend a lot of money to win the office. The press handed it to him because his face sold papers. The way that dead princess still does. That's why they shove her on the cover of the Daily Mail when they're out of something else to talk about. Maybe they'll push him through a tunnel like the last one. Maybe the media has a plan for him. Whatever it takes.
Oh, they don't have a plan for him.
I think the media, is so clueless, and I think they're so taken aback by this guy was
you
able to
You think
the
Daily Mail is clueless? I don't think they are at all.
Yeah,
I think they're step ahead of everybody else.
You think so?
Yeah, I think
they're very powerful. All they do is show off boobs and bumps of people.
I don't.
The fact that they've turned against the conservatives in this country means that the conservatives are definitely on their way out.
I think so.
Definitely.
I think they see
it. I just wonder, because you've got a president. Now, you know, he says a lot of kind of things. And if you look at before the election, it was very aggressive in tone, his tweets. Mm. You know, apparently it says he's attacked, using Twitter, insulted over 300 plus people since 2015.
Well, that's what Twitter's for, though.
Yeah.
But actually,
I insult people on Twitter all the time.
No Twitter, though. Twitter could essentially ban him.
But I think, not to defend Donald Trump, but he's using it for what people use it for. You know, like he's the people that he's speaking to try to put yourself in their shoes, in their great big farmer boots.
Yes.
And they'll be like, well, he at least he's telling us what he thinks.
He's throwing it down.
But also, I think he didn't want to be misrepresented in the press, and I think he felt he had been. And he had been misrepresented in the press. So really, you know, he's been created by us because he's what America wanted. I think people vote against their own best interests, and that's why they got him.
If you look, too, he's got only 31.7 million followers, which he's still not the number one. He's the most powerful person on the planet.
Kanye.
But he still does not have the most.
Kanye for president.
It's got to be one of those.
Taylor or Swift or someone.
Maybe could transition and then we'd get a
Did you
a
ever notice who people he follows? He only follows 45 people, too.
Oh, right.
He follows all his own golf courses.
Oh, yeah.
And he also follows...
Oh, because they're
you know, things like the Drudge Report and Coulter. Diamond and Silk. Do you know these two African-American girls who are, like, the biggest Trump supporters?
Oh, right.
They're hilarious. Roma Downey, the Irish actress, who's married to Mark Burnett.
Oh, right.
He follows her and Mark Burnett. Katrina Campins, who won The Apprentice, and Piers Morgan.
Oh, well, there you go.
He follows
Piers.
Do we
have to hear one more word from that ticket?
I mean, if you look at it, he's almost, like, the most powerful sort of... like liaison to Trump. He's Britain's like number one in.
He's so unpopular here.
Nobody
likes him.
But that's, you know.
Someone must like him, though. It's like the Daily Mail. Someone must like him. There's someone
else. But people like the contentiousness. He knows the names of all the men who fucked Diana. So that gives him, that's his thorny crown.
Well,
as a comedian, you have to admit he's quick-witted. And even though he's what, like 40, 47?
He wouldn't still be around.
So let's talk about this Paris climate thing. Because that was the other thing that we were talking about, obviously. You know, he's pulled out. And you know it's not like it hasn't happened before. George W. Bush did the same thing when he pulled out of the Kyoto Protocol, and he regretted it. It was like a symbolic act that he said afterwards. Damn, you know, we probably shouldn't have done that.
No,
mostly because it pissed off everybody. Yeah. It wasn't because the state of the it wasn't because Kyoto also didn't have China and India in it, but you know, which is very important. They had actually, unlike this one, which has no limits. It's like, hey, make up your own rules. Just stop doing it.
It was because he couldn't get rid of Obamacare. He couldn't enforce his Muslim ban. But he could do this.
I think that's right.
And bring it
home to a lot of people in the States who don't travel anywhere else in the world, who think the rest of the world's out to get them. Like a head of Medusa's head. Look what I've conquered. I disagree with all the rest of the world, and I think it makes him look powerful. But he doesn't realize how horrible.
Well, even his speech last week sounded paranoid and schizophrenic. The way he was getting the figures wrong, and then his little asides off script asides. That are just it's just tiny the amount of planet we're going to save. It's like, no, it's not.
That's not,
And I love that this mayor from Pittsburgh said, actually, you don't represent Pittsburgh. Because he did say, I wasn't voted to select. You know, they've said, no, you're wrong. And actually, the number of jobs being created by, you know, controlling climate change is sixfold.
It's the way forward. It's so obvious, isn't it?
Yeah, obviously.
So it's why China's signed up to it.
Yeah.
Because they realize there's jobs in this and there's people to work. But
was it just too symbolic?
This might be controversial, but Trump is a kind of figure that's bringing other people together. So it's at the Paris Accord, all those other leaders be sitting there going, all right, we got to talk.
Well,
we've got to talk about this.
It's like an intervention. Like, yeah. Let's have a talk
oil
about
man in his cabinet, though. And he's, you know, and that's again what influenced Bush when he made his decision. It took Obama, 7 years to intricately design this.
And the Chinese were obviously, interested in this and wanted it to happen. The difference, I would say, though, was that when the Kyoto Protocol and Bush pulled out of that, he didn't talk to anyone about it. He didn't tell the other leaders. Mm. It was just like, we're not doing it. Mm. Whereas this one, Trump actually did say to everyone, we are going to do this. This is the plan. But if you can convince me otherwise, I'm in. But convince me. And I'm willing to do another agreement if you can't convince me. And he still has said, even we're done this, I'm still open to something else. And he has,
but he's trying to pretend that it's because he pulled out for the right reason, that there was unattainable targets.
And it was the targets were all set by on the U.S. too, he said, which is untrue.
Right?
The problem is the targets were set by yourself.
Well, the targets have been met already in the U.S. The electricity target, 27%, has already been met by America.
Right, but that's the coast. That's the cities. Because you think about it, those are the big safety cities didn't vote for him. The UN ambassador, the UN has already said he does believe in climate change. He does think it's man-made. She said that today or yesterday.
They have said that? Yes.
She said that today or yesterday.
The American ambassador to the United Nations said that. Right. Trump has admitted he does. But you also look at it. So when you look at George Bush, when George Bush got in with Kyoto, he started saying, I don't really believe in it. I don't believe in it. Mm. Afterwards, Bush actually pushed through a lot of stuff. And he's now one of those things going, yeah, actually, I should have seen it. Mm-hmm. I do believe in it now. And it's a lot of times that maybe you've got these big oil guys going, oh, no, the planet loves it. Come on, let's drill and frack and do all this. And eventually you meet enough scientists, enough people from around the world and going, crap, like this is, there's places flooding. There's places, you know, we're killing people here.
Well, you're we'll talk about Canada for a sec, but you're a Justin Trudeau fan, aren't you? I can tell.
I'm a big fan of him.
He's taken stick in Canada for still building the pipelines because there is about $280 billion worth of oil in their hills. Mm-hmm. So he'd be an idiot as a leader of a country that's, you know, that needs jobs and money not to build those pipelines. So he can be seen as being anti-environment, but he's actually quite environmentally. I quite like Justin Trudeau, but I know you don't.
I just think if you're going to say something and you're going to make all these promises and you go against every one of them and it's just flip the hair, I just think it's very disingenuous and I just think he's full of a lot of BS.
Yeah, but I'm talking about specifically about the pipelines.
He said he was not going to build through a lot of the native areas and stuff, and they're just going to go ahead with it. And a lot of native leaders are like, what the hell are you doing?
Well, he's trying to explain to them why he's done it, but it's because it's money.
Yeah, it's money.
Which Indians don't really understand, as we know.
Yeah, give them beads.
Yeah, they beads
and whiskey.
They'll just open a casino.
You're not even allowed to call
them
Indians
money.
Anymore.
What are they meant to be called?
I don't know. Natives.
Indigenous peoples.
Natives.
This is why I've been banned
natives.
From Australia, right? Yeah. That's the reason.
The people that were there first.
Are you banned?
The Italians?
Are you banned from Australia? Oh, come on. Okay.
I went back and played Sydney last year for 2 weeks.
Did they know?
I told, well, no, the Comedy Store... We're great, but I sensed resistance. Anyway, and now I'm not. It's strange.
Yeah.
Under
okay.
your
famously
you know,
homophobic
as an Italian,
country.
No one's Italian they, heritage.
It is Australia's about 10 years behind the rest of the world for their sexual politics. It's crazy.
Yeah.
They are crazy.
Yeah, they're insane.
As an Italian, though, Italian citizens in America, you know, there was a travel ban against Italians, and they were treated like the lowest citizens.
You know, it's
citizens.
Funny you say that because. My husband is his family's part of his family's Italian from Brazil. My grandmother, you know, would tell me that when I was younger. And actually her dialect was a shame to her. Shameful. Because of where it was from in Italy.
Southern Italy was the low people.
Well, she was Tuscanese, but her dialect itself and the way she spoke, she was criticized and humiliated by other Italians as well in San Francisco and around, you know, when she got there. So yeah, there's always been someone you've got to ask someone below. Always yeah,
and the Italians, below, particularly the Southern Italians, and there was all these racist theories that these you know, geneticists were saying that, you know, because they're less evolved and there was stopping people from Southern Italy coming to America because of these racial things, and they enacted a travel ban against them. Oh. And they were sort of considered the lower sort of lives, just like the Irish at certain points,
and
the Irish and Italians.
In certain parts of the West Coast,
exactly.
In Oregon and other places.
And when you look at even in New York, that the Italians, and so we sort of see this sort of coming again in this circle. Where
also, because
like,
they were Catholic, and Protestants were seen as the upper edge of the hierarchy religiously. Catholics were seen as servants or worse, you know.
Do we assume we have a religious problem on this planet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice if just the aliens came down and just like, all right, guys, just stop it. Just stop fucking over.
Yes.
All
right.
They came down, they voted for Trump.
But, you know, yeah, exactly. They'll come down. We'll find a way of figuring out how to turn them into Christians.
You know, the thing is, we're just a race. Maybe we don't deserve to be here. You know, all this stuff I'm reading about, you know, not just climate change, but other things, lately about the environment, about parts of Louisiana are underwater now.
Yeah.
Haven't been reported at all, but whole islands and stuff are gone.
Right, yeah.
And sure. You just think, you know, maybe, you know, we're going to be floating along on the coast of, you know, Topeka, Kansas in 10 years.
No, Wales, the hills of Wales. That's where we're going to end
the
up.
The hills of Wales.
I think that, you know, that Ben, future islands. I reckon, I guess to figure, what's future islands mean? I think it means mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they are the future islands.
We'll all be living on the Andes.
We'll all be,
the polar bears will be knocking on our doors soon, and they're a lot less hospitable than the
come on, we're going to sell all those polar bears to China.
Yeah.
Because
their English is better. Yeah. I just, you know, I don't know what to expect in the future, but I feel like there's this feeling that the lunatics have taken over the asylum a little bit. I think this terrorist attack that happened recently here, the three, it brings down the morale a bit. But I think the morale in the UK and the US and other forward-thinking nations is so low anyway by anyone who reads the paper or uses utensils to eat or wears shoes at night when they leave the house. I think any of those sorts of people, you know, I don't just mean liberal. I mean anyone who thinks or has sympathy or empathy for anyone other than themselves. I just think that they wonder if there's a chance.
Well, then you look at, say, we look at a country like Russia, where apparently, you know, approval polls for Putin, ultimate high.
The thing is, I've never been. My husband will go with me, and I want to go. I don't want to go alone. But he believes the hype. You know, you read all this stuff, and then you go to a place, you know, you go to a place like Dubai to work, and the people are great. Yes, okay, they don't have free press. Yes, they don't have a judicial system. But the culture itself, I swear to God, to me, Qatar, the gayest place. Doha is so queer. I had Siri.
Are you going to go with the travel ban?
Oh my God!
All the travel ban. Yeah, in Qatar.
Where they? You know, the Syrian hairdresser's chasing me to my room.
Yeah.
While your classical piano in the hallway. You know, it's like.
But Scruffy's band. I can't believe it.
Well, I heard that. You know, I went on Grindr while I was just research purposes. I mean, I'm in a hotel after all, and I have people tell, don't do that because it's fake. It's government. I say, it's not fake. It's not fake at all.
Yeah.
These guys are dry humping the hell. We went to parties where the German female hookers are just their wallpaper. They're just there to observe the guys going in the toilets together and doing cocaine off each other's cocks. There is no problem with any of that sort of thing. Whereas here, you know, it's a bit
I can't wait for the World Cup.
Yeah.
Come on, Qatar.
That's going to be interesting.
That's a World Cup for me.
We know that, but it's almost like simplistic. When I was a teenager, I realized that people that are so dead set against something are usually going to be completely into it.
And the message they must put out there to the world is that of some sort of conservative behavior so that they can get whatever investments they require. But when you go there, that's what I'm saying. Maybe all the stuff we hear about Russia, you know, maybe it's bullshit. I mean, we kind of learned this with Chechnyans recently anyway. Who are we actually on the side of? Mm-hmm. Also, to be honest, you know, it's not so forward thinking. I mean, I'm Italian. I can't move there. They don't have marriage equality. How the fuck is that a possibility?
Really in Italy.
Wow. Yeah, so we can
move there. The Roman Catholic Church is in the middle of it, like at that center of the.
I know, but it's also part of the EU.
Yes,
and how is that a possibility that. I mean, we can move them, but my husband can't work. It's bullshit. It's like, or Poland, the way they behave about the gays and about women's rights. It's like, you know, who are we meant to believe? I mean, you know, fucking Northern Ireland can't get an abortion. It's. I mean, marriage is illegal in Northern Ireland, by the way,
Ireland,
gay marriage.
That's a step up for Ireland, though.
Northern Ireland, they don't have marriage equality, by the way. My marriage is not legal there in Belfast.
Well, even because it's part of the United Kingdom, though.
It's not legal.
And what about Qatar? Was it legal there?
Didn't matter. I'm off the hook in Qatar.
Is that what you told your husband? We ain't married.
I said, honey, you can't come. It's too dangerous. And don't call me or anything. But weirdly, in my hotel room, I had a huge bed and a fold-out sofa. I'm like, ooh, let the good times roll. I'm still tired thinking about that trip. But yeah, you know, I just think, anyway, I'd like to go to Russia and see for myself.
Okay, let's ask this then. You know, do you think that Russia influenced or had any effect in the American election?
Of course.
That we do theirs, too.
What are you kidding? Putin even said that. He goes, why are you even asking these questions? What world are you living in?
Of course
didn't influence. They're influencing now as we sit here.
Yes.
They're a little more influential than we are on this.
That's what I mean. They are more than our votes.
They are. And all over the world. So, you know, and I'm not just being Vietnam as a communist country, but they of course they're going to influence those people are going to be on their side.
Do you think the Russian state, though, because Putin had said, look, we've got patriotic Russians who are probably doing this for the sake of Russia. It has nothing to do with that. We wouldn't order this. Do you think that they were complicit in ordering that?
You mean the guy that ex-head of the KGB might be lying? Yeah, I think that
the KGB lie. I can't even say it right. KGB, the KGB. No, but the thing is,
that's what he does. Yeah,
lying. They're called spies.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone use that word anymore? I love it, but no one ever says spies anymore.
Spies, no, there's no spies.
I know. I love the word spies.
I thought if there was more spies, the terror attacks would maybe not have happened if they were to infiltrate.
Good spies.
Infiltrate.
But they're too busy. The, high levels, those, not guys
no,
who are
obviously
renting
these
a
people
van
are
from
radicalized,
B&Q.
And they're radicalized at a fundamental religious and mosque level, and they need those places. The fact that you can go into a prison and go to a mosque in a prison, not allow any of the other,
the guards can't watch what you're doing,
is insane, right? Even if they're Muslims, that's insanity, and so there should be spies.
It's odd to me that
I think you should get involved in Islam.
Spying.
The thing is, my legs are too long for a trench coat. I look pervy. but I just think that, you know, America's been trying to influence elections in most of the world.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, they do.
Yeah. Flipped monarchs and leaders in other countries for decades.
Put up puppets wherever they want.
So why we're shocked and dismayed by this?
So we go from our beliefs there to the radical, conspiracy theorists who thinks that those actual three attacks in the last 3 months are actually red flags that, or red flag, false flags that to change the direction of the course of the election.
No, they
here.
Are, of course. Yeah,
then they will do. They will change. Yeah, I think, fortunately, it looks like they're changing them away from the Conservatives because of her record as a Home Secretary.
Well, but, I mean, that's the British. Mm-hmm. Let's get in. The Americans yesterday, they arrested somebody. I don't know if you saw. The Justice Department arrested someone for espionage. And I'm not lying. This is the best fucking name I've ever heard.
Too. I love that word.
Reality Lee.
Yes.
Winner.
Reality winner.
No. Reality winner.
A young white woman. Yeah.
And no. The fact is, the president is a reality winner as well. She's a reality winner. She apparently spoke a few languages. She removed secure files from this Pluribus International Corporation, which is in Georgia, which apparently is linked to the NSA. And she mailed some stuff from the NSA to a news outlet. Now, she gets outed. The person, the reporter who didn't get outed, which seems a bit weird, that person should have to face it if they're going to out somebody, I would think.
Yeah.
And so now she's being arrested and they're being charged with espionage. This 25-year-old.
But the reporter is allowed to stay.
The reporter is allowed to stay anonymous. Mm-hmm. So is, you know, we're talking scapegoats here. Before James Comey testifies on Capitol Hill on June 8th.
Thursday.
Thursday, June 8th.
The day of the election.
Well, it's going to be Thursday's a very political day. So is this like, here comes the bus? Who should we grab? How about reality winner?
Yeah, you know, she's like central casting, right? But I also think that until Snowden admits that he's a paid spy for Russia, we're not going to get anywhere with getting him either back to the U.S. or in jail where he fucking belongs.
Do you think, so you think that Snowden should be captured, thrown in jail for what he's done and...
He broke the law.
Yeah. Yes.
And so did this writer from The Guardian and his boyfriend. Those two should be in jail as well. What are they doing writing stories?
And what about Assange?
Yeah, of course he should be in prison. I mean, look, the thing is, you broke the law. You took an oath. I mean,
he's breaking the law in the public interest, though.
And also, is it? Because Assange supports conservatism. So
he does now.
He's obviously a Republican.
He does now.
Yeah.
And it was unclear in the beginning.
Pamela Anderson.
He looked like he was doing a service for mankind early on, but it now appears he's just doing it for the money.
Yeah.
Well, you wonder if it's just the ego, because, you know, he seems to have this sort of ego about himself. But Snowden, the same thing. You wonder, you know, he's trapped.
They're all just trying to build names. Greenwald just wanted a bigger name and some sort of award that she probably will get. You know, the writer from The Guardian, I mean. When you're transporting illegal documents, whatever they are, across borders, you know, when you get caught, sorry, but...
You got caught.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a spy until
Greenwald's
you get caught.
Yeah.
So did you see so Megyn Kelly, I don't know if you saw this, the softball pitches she threw at Putin, that interview. She launched her own show on Sunday night, and Putin at one point, basically, she was trying to get answers from, and he was like, basically, just telling her to fuck off in a way. But he did say, you people are so creative over there, good job, your lives must be so boring. You know? Take some balls on a guy like that to be able to throw that stuff out.
He's enjoying this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's really having fun with it.
Yeah, why wouldn't you?
Well,
he loves all the attention because none of it can be proven. It just makes him more powerful in his own country.
Well, that's all he thrives. He thrives off that kind of power and that kind of leader.
It's also a beautiful deflection from what you're doing in the country.
And from the failure, the economy you're heading that's completely failing. Yeah. I mean, you know, they're all warmongers. As much as we remember FDR favorably, he wanted a war.
Oh, yeah.
And so did Churchill. I mean, they want wars because it builds their legacy.
It's good for the economy as well.
Well, they also say that Putin is actually the richest man on the planet. They say that Putin actually has all of the resources and he keeps them for himself. And they say, a lot of economists have said that although they can't actualize it based on the amount of things that he's taken, that he would be worth hundreds of billions of dollars.
He can take me. He's got chest implants. What I think is is good to remember, though, is that, you know, war, it's good for manufacturing unless you're involved in it.
The rich really are.
But up until the point that we were led into it by these fuckers who ran out of guns and bullets. Yeah. And they wanted, you know, John Wayne. Then when John Wayne, you know, firebombs Europe, they get mad. But anyway, you know, it destroys, if you get involved, it destroys at least one generation of skilled workers. Mm.
But the nature of war has changed in a way that we're not using mass troops like we used to and mass industry. It's more... smaller, killing robotically.
But it disrupts finance and it disrupts investment, which is bad.
Well, yeah. I mean, you could be cynical and say that the people in investment follow it to a point where they use it to their own gain. Because if they know, if they've got information that know where they know they're going to bomb next, then they can put money in, take money out, and move gold around.
It disrupts the markets, though.
Yeah.
Well, then you have someone interesting like Neil Tyson deGrasse, who said he thinks the next trillionaire, the first trillionaire on our planet, will be the first person who learns how to mine asteroids.
Well, it'll be Elon Musk then.
Well, I mean,
Elon Musk, Lord Emperor of Earth.
Just, who's been born with that name?
Sounds great, isn't it?
Already, yeah.
Yeah, reality winner, come here. we together.
You shall serve.
I think Elon Musk. I want to get rid of billionaireism. I just think it's ridiculous. And I'm Jesse Ventura fan. I was never a fan of wrestling, but you don't need to have more than $100 million.
Well, even in conservatism and socialism and everything, you know, even under real conservatism, too much money like that.
How many shoes can you wear, Imelda?
It's right, because even as a real conservatives would also say, that's too much money. No one should have that much undue influence.
Unnecessary.
And it doesn't affect, because does is it stops growth of the whole economy.
Yes, and also just on a very empathetic level, there are people starving in the streets all over the world. And I'm not saying that necessarily that's the right way, because maybe, you know, you can see the logic, feeding people means there's more people and health. But health, education, these are socialist ideals, but they're just human. There's humane ideals. I don't think if a humane person be able to walk past a starving animal and not go, maybe we should help the starving
animal. I'm never sure it's money, though, although money helps. Because there have been times in my life when I had a lot of money. And it did. I was.
Tell us about that, Scott.
Really,
what did you
not
do?
Not a lot. You were really happy.
You do things where you get a big chunk at once, in this business.
Sure.
It's so unpredictable, this business. But I got too big to me.
Yeah.
I mean, nothing more than five figures, but I had this money and I was single. And I thought, woo. And life seemed easier and better. Blowjobs for everybody. But
so,
now,
yeah, so imagine having $100 million.
Exactly.
Blowjobs for everybody.
For everybody. You may get married. You may compromise.
Yeah, you can still give blowjobs to everybody. Scott,
they're free when you're married. I mean, I miss the income, but it's a compromise. But yeah, I think it's not about money so much. They've done research in the U.S. where they've gone to public schools, public meaning not private.
Yes,
and they've given students computers, and they've looked to see in a period of time after if that improved their scores, and it didn't. And part of the reason for that, they found, was because when the students went home, they had no support at home. So no matter how much, data you gave them at school, it didn't help their studying. So I think, money's good. But what money also does is help people within communities kind of support one another. You know, we were just in Greece, and a lot of the people I met who work and live there are moving back to the villages and small towns they live in to help support their families, not just financially, but in every other way, like building small schools, improving the medical systems there because they have medical experience, or farming and growing their own food, becoming more self-sufficient. I do see an important step in supporting and nurturing communities, which the Labour government were very good at 20 years ago, and which I wish they kind of go back to. Because it's not just about money.
Well,
I kind of wish I was from a place like Brazil or French Canada, where families are important to people. And I think it gives you a chance to build your own life a bit stronger.
Family is a big part of it. In the West, we've broken families down. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to bang on about it, but as we were driving through the mountains in the north of Vietnam, and we were dropping off the mountains into these little areas, tribal villages of like the Zhao tribe or the Hmong tribe, who don't speak Chinese or Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. They've been there for centuries, for like 6 to 8 centuries. And it's all families, and there's loads of little kids. Everyone's really happy. You've got like, and this maybe sounds horrible to us, but you like a 6-year-old girl with her 2-year-old brother on her back helping her mom, and there'll be like a family of people all working, and every time we stop, and it could just be a bit of a cliche, but every time we stop, people were happy, friendly, well fed. There's no dearth of food. There's and they're all working. Now that's a serfdom in a sense. That's what they're. And but we went in to eat breakfast at this. It's not. There's no restaurants. We went into like the little alcove where the woman was making breakfast, and it was full of mothers with their children, with their backpacks on, and their school uniforms, getting ready to go to school because it's a communist country. So they're educated and literate and all that. But they come back to these. They only do half days because their families need them to help work in the fields. That's from when they can walk and talk. But they're not uneducated and they're not illiterate. They're they're not unhealthy, and this is maybe my take on. And I could be wrong. You maybe someone correct me on stats and figures, but this looked for me from where I was looking very healthy, very happy, and very communal way of living that where people all the kids were working together. And I think it's lost in Western culture a little bit.
Well, there's I think there's also a divide with the economics of Western culture in that everyone has to work, and there's also this sort of disconnect. I think when you find a lot of families that. Parents have to go working and they miss that connection with their kids and that family time that we used to have. And a lot of times where it used to be it was dad would work and mom would stay at home, there was at least that tether that would at least sort of hold the families. Now it's everyone's away and kids, and we're finding a lot of kids today, while there's a lot, what I would say a lot of losers, as Trump would call them, these crazies, is because they don't have that support. They don't have that sort of thing at home where there's, you know, a social sort of construct where mom and dad can give sort of examples of how to live your life and how to be responsible. And you're just having people losing themselves in social media and then getting slayed by their friends because there's all this pool of insecurity on there.
Well, one of my closer friends in the world who is a Trump supporter, or is slowly ebbing away, but it's a Trump supporter. It's one of the things he likes about him is like, well, look at this guy. He's a family man.
Well, his family's all in politics.
His family are all around him. Mm-hmm. His family are his closest allies. His family's family. And I was kind of like, I can't really argue with that other than look at them. But the Adams family.
If you see him, though, he's an amazing grandfather. He's hired his kids in for everything. Yeah. He brings his family. And I should say, he trusts his family.
Well, that's what a monarchy is. Jesus.
There we go.
Yeah, it's true,
King,
though.
King,
you know?
Trump.
But, you know,
Boo-boo Rex.
He was trying to get rid of this draining of the swamp, and he brings his family in as the only people you can trust. And, you know. Stays. Is that a good thing? Because a lot of
well,
you know,
can you trust Jared Kushner?
But he's the son-in-law. I mean, he's apparently like,
why
all
he's
rights,
showing up
a brilliant
in places
kid.
Like Iraq.
Why
to
is
discuss,
he showing up? I know.
When those generals look across the table at him, they're wondering, what am I talking to
I know,
right now?
I
some
know.
Pretty boy from Manhattan. Why are you here?
They probably think this guy's going to be easily taken because
well, he's also quite. He's got a reputation of being quite ruthless and very brilliant.
Yes.
He was a genius property. He did what Trump, I think, wanted to do, which was become a genius property developer. Okay. Very intelligent.
He's a lizard, but none of them have any political experience whatsoever.
But is that a bad thing?
Yes, because right now, other countries in the world are looking at the U.S. seeing how unstable it is, thinking, this is the time we pounce.
But you still have lots of other people involved in the politics that are still career politicians. You still have this swamp still exists. There's still gators. There's still the mangrove. There's
it's
still
true,
a lot of stuff
there. But
no
one knows who's running the country. Not really.
But you
we've
know,
questioned it on this show today.
Well, we're saying Steve Bannon is running the country. Really? Really, though?
I don't know.
But he's a new Dick Cheney. There's always, it seems to be, and I don't know because I watch House of Cards, but there always seems to be this nefarious,
a corpse wringing their hands
underscoring
in the
element.
Know,
they're the Slytherin chamber somewhere underneath the White House.
I know. I think House of Cards this season is great, but it's too nice, if you could say that about that show.
Isn't that amazing, right?
Yeah.
You can't get worse than the reality or better than the reality.
Well, then you get the biting Veep, winner. Which has been brilliant this past season. She is so good.
Have you seen the whole season?
Oh, God. It's so funny. Some of the lines. I mean, I don't know if you watch it, but it's comedian.
You're a dumb, dead wife who you never stop talking about. I've replayed that like 5 times. Do you remember her in the first season when she went to get a Starbucks coffee?
Yeah.
And the woman her age behind the cash register working didn't know how to do it. Yeah. How to work that. And the look on her face watching her was both empathy and I want to eat you alive.
Oh, yeah.
It was just a brilliant close-up. And I thought, I forgot how good an actress this woman is. She's fantastic.
She is genius. I remember one of the best ones, the awards or something was going on so long. She's like, oh, my God, this thing's lasting longer than Black History Month.
I love her.
But it's a real, I mean, obviously, because it's a British TV show, originally The Thick of It, and it's the American. It's a real insight sometimes, because a lot of us who don't see politics and have a knowledge of politics, our sort of knowledge of politics comes from a lot
of
these television shows.
I think the thing
shows.
That makes him dangerous in that TV show is the brilliant script writing. Mm-hmm. What makes Trump dangerous is his lack of knowledge of the way the political system works and the way international diplomacy is meant to work. I mean, you know, for me, when you say diplomat, I get an erection because I think cunt. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there is a point to knowing what the boundaries are and what these people's names are and where their countries are and how this all sort of works.
And not that, shoving leaders out of the way to get front of the picture.
Exactly. That makes Americans safer in the long run. And I think what Trump does is he tears the walls down. Some people, self-hating 70-year-old white men who think that they've had it tough.
Yeah.
That because their lives are almost over or are over.
Yeah.
But what do you say to people who are 18 or 25 who want an education and want to travel the world and want to learn things? You, it's like that's why I think that that what's happened here in the last year in the U.S. are so similar, because these old fucks in Reading who voted to leave Europe, you know, who gives a shit about them? They're on their last breath. But what about their great grandkids?
Oh, yeah.
How are their lives going to be when they can't get research done, or they can't get a student grant, or they can't be educated somewhere else, or they can't cross a border for a job? You fucked their lives because you don't like the way that looks.
Mm-hmm.
When you're not even reading, you don't even know what the fuck it is, you Welsh cunt, you know? It's like fucking, until you vote on something, but in a way, you know, in a way, the whole thing, the vote itself was drawn to simply, do you want to leave Europe? Yes or no?
Yeah. It was a huge mistake.
A huge mistake. And it's much more serious than Trump because it's much more long-lasting.
Mm-hmm.
And people...
And it's hard to take back. You can't take it back.
And it's created sides in this country. As foreigners, I think we didn't think there really were
sides before.
I didn't. That's
actually.
What appealed
well,
to
it was
us about.
Class. And now it's turned into something weirder.
And class
weirder.
I can play with because, you know, that I understand as a comic. That's fun to talk about on stage.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was about race in the long run because race is much more touchy
you
here.
You talk about Brexit on stage, and the few times I've mentioned, I've got it because my new Edinburgh show has a thing about you're wrong, about being wrong, and I have to touch on it. And it just causes the atmosphere in the room goes ding.
When they had the best deal before, as a foreigner, you just think, why, again, are the British going to shoot themselves in the... in their web-toed foot.
But I think it's because Hull was about to become the European capital of culture. And they thought,
after
they
Londonderry.
Went there.
Well, it's hard to, when you talk about this, sort of the racism against, particularly against a lot of the Eastern Europeans, when we look at what happened in London and we see all the heroes, it's Romanians. It was the Eastern Europeans that were actually going out there and putting themselves...
What's the point of blaming people who are on the same tax bracket as a billionaire down the street in Notting Hill, when they're paying basically 20 times more the tax of any rich person around the corner.
Yeah.
Why are you blaming them for the condition of your life in Boston, Britain?
Yeah.
It's like, if you want to fix it, vote in a different politician. But and if you don't understand the EU, then educate yourself. But if you think it's a different level of bureaucracy you want to get rid of, you've just created another one by handing your civil rights over to UKIP.
Yeah.
Because basically the Conservatives are UKIP now.
They are, yeah.
You've melded those two parties.
Yeah. It was insane. I know.
But do we see the relations between the UK and America getting better after this week?
Well, I don't. It depends how the election goes. But I'm left leaning, and I hope that it becomes a hung parliament.
How do you see Corbyn and Trump getting along?
Well, he's a diplomatic. You know, I mean. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Corbyn talks to people, so
he'll be fine.
But he knows what he doesn't. I'm sure he's not a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he's not a fan.
Well, when they were holding hands, he and the snake, what's her name? When she went over, she opened her legs, the first one to do it. You know, she was there in like 5 minutes after
she's
elected.
She's blown it by being so like desperate.
She was stupid because she thought that he had, outside of his family, that he could have some sort of, kind of a feeling for someone, or that he could have some sort of honest relationship. He is going to cut everyone to pieces that he can.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He screwed her in the cab on the way to the airport because he signed that fucking Muslim ban while she was coming back. And they know what the relationship is with that community in this country.
Yeah.
He screwed her so quickly. I think, I think Corbyn is used to not trusting people.
Mm-hmm. He knows where he stands. He doesn't change his stance. That's why I like about him.
Well, it'll be interesting because on the next episode, we'll obviously talk about because of the result. But I want to sort of wind this down and sort of ask you guys two last questions before we sort of end it. Do you think, first question, do you think that Donald Trump will be impeached?
Well, I think that he's going to, if he isn't, he'll serve 4 years of being in court.
Yeah.
That it'll be just a lot of money spent on court cases.
I don't think they'll impeach him because I don't think American people are ready for that. That's big. And even though people will talk about it and threaten it and try it, I don't think it will ever come to that.
Okay. And the second question, do you think he'll win re-election?
You know, I thought about this a lot. And I think that because he's doing what he said he would do and because the numbers are up in the U.S., the stock market's having this weird honeymoon with him still, and the employment figures are very low. The 20% top income earners are pulling away from the rest of the U.S., but if anything, that feeds that weird American dream that's never been true of we can do well, too. If
we can all do it.
Mm-hmm. If the economy stays at the level it's at now, he'll definitely be reelected.
Very difficult in 8 years to keep an economy at that sort of breakneck pace, particularly without having any global crises.
You know, in the U.S., you've got a very educated workforce that, to differ from this country, are willing to make sacrifices to differ from the EU workforce. They're willing to lessen their hours and take lesser pay to keep their jobs. And I think with that, if data research grows in California the way it's continued to do, and if the way it's trending in the U.S. is happening, all the money's in California right now. Yeah. All the research money is there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If that continues, I don't see why it should be any
worse. What about Calexit? What about California leaving?
I mean, ain't going to happen. They love that story.
I know. It's fantastic.
But I think that San Francisco will have a conservative mayor in 2 years. And the state of California will have a Republican governor again. Yeah. Reagan in the past.
He did,
Schwarzenegger.
Of course. I think that Kanye is going to...
Kanye will be the next one?
I think Kanye is going to take him out.
All right.
He'll be our next
dinner.
Democratic black president, Kanye West.
But that's it, guys. Thanks for joining us on the first episode of Scrotus
Potus. That's kind of serious, though.
It did, but it's politics.
You know what?
I
try to be funny.
And it gets you in trouble online.
I know.
Thanks for joining me, guys. Thanks a lot. Thank you.